Right. Good evening, morning, afternoon, whatever time of day it is that you're listening to this. For you guys, good evening. So tonight, I want to speak basically about Erev Pesach. Not just the Bittul and Bir Chametz and the Bedikas Chametz, but also other things that we get involved with on Erev Pesach, with the exception of baking matzah, because whoever's going to be doing that, they'll give you a rundown wherever you're going, and whoever's not, then it's not so nogea anyway. So in regards to Erev Pesach, so we started the night before, so the night of the 14th of Nisan, so we have to do Briga Chametz. Now, someone who's leaving, say they're leaving for the first days of Pesach, or whatever it is, they're not going to be home the night of Pesach, they're not going to be home for Briga Chametz. So they should still do it earlier in the month. And then, let's call it this way, when they come home. When they come home in the middle of Pesach, everything's already taken care of. But for those of us who are going to be doing it, who are staying here or who are leaving Friday morning, let's say, so then we would do Birka Chametz in the proper time, which is the 14th of Nisan. So, ideally, Birka Chametz should be done after we've already cleaned the house from Chametz. We shouldn't be using the Birka Chametz as the proper time for cleaning. We shouldn't really be expecting to find all that much. Not that Brika Chametz is a symbolic act, because it really is there to make sure you cover every nook and cranny and don't miss anything. But it's not to say that it's a night of spring cleaning either. Mm-hmm. You know, a two-bedroom apartment shouldn't take 6 hours to do Brika Chametz. If you have a mansion, okay, maybe 6 hours if you want to go through every room and every bathroom and a bunch of kids and everything else. But it shouldn't be an all-night affair. It should take time. You want to take your time with it and go through everything you need to, but don't need to go crazy with it either. So the proper time for Brika Chametz is, one, after we've already cleaned the house from Chametz, and two, ideally one should already pray Arvit before Birka Chametz, and three, it should be done after Tzedek Kochavim, which we don't have to wait for Zman Rabbeinu Tam. You don't have to wait for 72 minutes after Shkia to go to Birka Chametz. As long as it's 20-30 minutes after Arvit or after Shkia, then you can go, you can already start it. If someone always prays Arvit, let's say 10 o'clock at night, and they have enough time after Tzedek Kochavim to do the Birka Chametz before they go pray Arvit, so in such a case, could be that they could do that. They would have to say Kriyat Shema first. Depends on the timing of Kriyat Shema is also going to depend here. Could be you'd have to interrupt the Birka to say Kriyat Shema, although we do say Osek Mitzvah Pater Min Mitzvah, so we don't really want to get into that situation. So in general, it's probably better, even if you pray Arvit every day at 10 o'clock at night, probably better just the night of Birka Chametz to go pray Arvit right after Mincha, right after Shkia, come home. At that point, you'll probably be able to repeat Kriyat Shema, again, 20-30 minutes after Shkia. And the other one should wait for about 45 minutes. The other one would be Machmir, 72 minutes. But you'd be able to do Birka Chametz at that point without a problem. So before the Bidika, you're not allowed to eat a full bread meal. You're not allowed to sit down and have several slices of the cake. You want to have a little nash, you want to chop a mezainis real quick. So I used to say in my yeshiva, chop a mezainis. You could, grab a cookie if you want, or a couple of pretzels, Again, you don't have to have all of your chametz gotten rid of before bidyak chametz, at least not this year. So you could still have a little bit left over. Just make sure you eat it over a plate and you throw it in the trash and get rid of it before the time of beer the next morning. But you could have a snack, you could have some fruit, you can have a drink of water, you could have some tea. Could even be better to have some tea or coffee or something that'll wake you up a little bit. Not to say that you should, pound an espresso or five to be up all night, but something just to keep you more alert and focused while you're doing the job. And it's not just one's house that's included in bidyak chametz. It also is your car. Technically, if you have an office, that would also be included. The garage or place of business, whatever it is, those would also be included. However, the bracha on bidyak chametz, so there's a machloket whether so your car is covered by the bracha. But if you have to go travel to go to your office to go through the bidyka, so the machloket if the bracha is going to cover that, should have it in mind, especially also if a lot of people, they don't work at night or have access to their office at night, so at that point then you do it the next morning, and don't make a bracha then. Say the kol chamira on the bidika and beer. So if someone has a normal shear at the time of bidika, better to have the shear after bidika or to move the shear to an earlier time so that way it doesn't interfere with bidika's chametz. If there's a concern that some of the people aren't going to come home or come back to the class if you send them home to go do the bidika, then you can give the class at the regular time. So this year, if there's a Thursday night class that anyone goes to, and if you're not sure if you go home, that you can go back to the class, so just stay for the class and come home and do the bidika chametz. Thankfully, Pesach's not on a Thursday night this year, so the Wednesday night class, was at the show next week, will still go on. Let's see. So the ikar bidika really falls on the man or the husband of the house, so he's the one who should make the bracha, have everyone in mind. Everyone in the house, though, the wife, any children above bar bat mitzvah, and really children who are above the age of chinuch should also be involved somehow in the bidika. Whether children who aren't bar bat mitzvah, so they should be supervised by someone who is, you can send other people to different areas in the house, and the husband or the father, whatever it is, doesn't have to go into every single room and supervise everybody. He can rely on his wife checking bedroom A and his adult son checking bedroom B, and we can work that out. You can designate a shliach to do bidika chametz for you. This happens a lot of times with shuls. The gabbai becomes the shliach to do the bidika for the shul. If the entire bidika is being done by a shliach, so the bracha should be recited by the shliach, but if, let's say, the father of the house, or the baal bayit, let's say he's an older person who doesn't have the strength or the ability to bend down and check everything, but he does some of the bidika, so he should say it, and then the shliach should do the rest of it. There is a custom to hide 10 pieces of bread. So there is an idea brought down by the Ramah that if the entire house is cleaned of chametz and you make a bracha on beer chametz and you don't find anything, so the Ramah brings down, it could be it's a bracha levatala. And for Sfaradim, it becomes a big problem because the bracha levatala is an isur deraita. So the Ramah brings down the custom to hide 10 pieces of bread. Could be if you don't find any chametz. Also, you'll forget to nullify the chametz in the morning. Not to be tool chametz because you won't have anything to burn. if you know that there's chametz in the house, obviously you'll be more meticulous to try and find the pieces, especially if you don't know where they are yet. Someone will hide them. And there are reasons. Al pi Kabbalah brought in the Priyat Chaim and Mori Be'etzba for this as well. And Yanim, we're not going to get into.
You got the stores that open Chol HaMoed Pesach.
Yeah.
There is goyim that work in the store. No, you bring chametz. Still need the bikat chametz, but you know.
So a store would need bikat chametz unless you're going to sell the store to the goy for the duration of Pesach, which wouldn't be the worst thing on the planet anyway. Especially if you're going to have goyim working Chol HaMoed, and then you know they're not going to listen and not going to bring in. You know, they're going to bring in their bagels or their bread or whatever it is. So then it could be better just to sell the store to the goy and get out of all the problems.
So
include the store and the mechira. Yeah. Really, you don't have to worry about your goy's chametz because it's not yours. So if, you know, the goy comes over with chametz, you don't have to worry about it. It's not yours. And if he drops a couple of crumbs behind, you just flush it down the toilet, because it's not your chametz. You're not accepting the chametz as part of your shoe. And even if he leaves it behind, you don't want it. So you're not getting a bat loot over the chametz. So that wouldn't be a problem. But if you want to be really machmir, so just sell the store to the goy. Include the store and any chametz found in the store in the mechira. Also regarding mechiras chametz, really be careful. If you're selling it with Chabad, Rabbi Shpinbin, Rabbi Beautiful, I don't know who's selling it around here. Make sure you don't sell the kelim. It's a big problem to sell the kelim, because if you sell the kelim to the goy, so then you have to tova the kelim again. But because it's a machloket, if you really do or not, so you just tovel all the kelim without a beracha, but save yourself the headache of having to tovel, you know, scores or hundreds of kelim after Pesach. Just, don't sell the kelim. Sell the chametz that's attached to the kelim, or the chametz that's balua b'kelim, but definitely not the kelim themselves. The Kosnot says someone who doesn't have anyone else to check the house with, he should hide the 10 pieces himself. And the idea of the bedikah is not just to find these 10 pieces, it's to go through the whole home. So it's not like, okay, I know my house is clean, I have just have to go find these 10 pieces that someone hid, I'll be done in 5 minutes. It's not about that. As Sammy was saying over Shabbat, there are other spiritual union involved with bedikah comments and trying to go through the house and, you know, think of things that we could have done better, or something that we maybe shouldn't have done in this corner of the house or that room of the house, whatever it is, and try and set ourselves up spiritually to walk into Pesach free and clean. So Bidikah Hametz is required in any place where you brought Hametz during the year. Or if you have children, just consider the entire house, because you'll find waffles in the VCR, or not a VCR, whoever still has a VCR. But you'll find Cheerios in the AC. You'll find that, you know, there's a story I heard a couple years ago where, you know, it was cold before Pesach, and they didn't bother to check the AC unit, and the over Chol HaMoed it got warm, so they turned on the AC, and all of a sudden the AC just started shooting out little flecks of bread and whatnot, because one of the kids had hid the bread in there. So make sure you check all the little spots. Kids have a habit of finding every nook and cranny that they can get half a finger in. But if there's a room that or area that you're selling to the non-Jew for Pesach, so let's say I take all the kelim or all the my chametz items and I'm putting them in my closet, and the kelim with the chametz that's attached to them I'm selling, I also put in that closet, and whatever it is, and I tie it up, or I put a piece of tape over it, says chametz, or belongs to the goy, whatever it is. So that closet I don't have to check to say there's chametz in there. Even if I know there's chametz in there, I don't have to do bricha chametz in there. Why? Because I don't have to worry about it. I'm selling it to the goy before 5 hours into the day, the next day. So I won't be over the issue of owning chametz on Pesach.
Talk a bit about the goy have to have like access to your house, right? So how would they visit here? Put like a key under the mat or?
Right. So if you're in an apartment building, there's a couple ways to do it. One is you get a lockbox and put it on the front door, and give the rabbi who's selling the chametz for you the key. if you yourself are going away, so you need to do something like that, or go to your neighbor down the hall and say, Menachem, can you if the goy comes and knocks on my door, or if the goy wants to get something from my chametz spot, I'm gonna have Rabbi Shmidman call you, or I'm gonna have Rabbi Birfel come knock on your door with the goy and have you give them access to my house. So you can do it like that too. If you're home for Pesach, so you don't have to worry about it, because as long as you're home, the goy can knock on the door, and you know you can say, "Hey, I'm the goy, the Rabbi Shmidman, whatever," and you know, I want to go grab the whiskey you said you had in the closet that I bought. Okay, fine. Let him in. He can take it. And after Pesach, they'll do a cheshbon. They'll determine how much he actually owes you. It's not like when the rabbi sells it, the goy buys it for $5. And if he takes all the chametz, it's all he owes. The whole thing is that the goy has a certain amount of time to come up with the money to pay for everything he bought. And if he doesn't, then it reverts, the sale isn't nullified, because then you'd have an issue of owning chametz retroactively on Pesach, but the sale becomes canceled and everything that's in your reshut comes back to you, provided the goy didn't take it over Pesach. There is also a big onion. If there was a case that happened a year or two ago, the goy did come, knocked on someone's door, and said, "Listen, I want to take whatever," and they started screaming, "You can't do this, you have to ask the rabbi, it's only a symbolic, whatever." It's problematic. If, you know, there's a story, the thing with the Chasan Ish, the Chofetz Chaim, used to go around Dafka on Pesach, Dafka with the goy, knocking on people's doors, "Okay, take what you want, take what you want." You have to give it to him, because it belongs to him. If you're going around, "Yeah, it's a sale, whatever, it doesn't mean anything," it doesn't mean anything, and you have a problem with owning chametz in Pesach. You're saying the sale isn't worth anything. If you're dafka selling it to the goy, and you're holding that you can sell it to the goy, so if the goy comes knocking on the door, you have to give it to him, because it belongs to him. Right? He has to pay you for it. You know, he can't just take it and say, "Okay, this is mine, I bought it for $5. No, the rabbi, the Beit Din, whatever it is, will come in and assess how much he actually owes you for taking it. The mice, if he comes knocking, you have to give it to him. So after the Vidika, then the text, every Haggadah on the planet has it in there. The Kol Chamira, the Kol Chamira, the Ika Bereshuti, any chametz that I find that are in my possession, right? The Lo Chaziteu, the Lo Be'arte, that I didn't find, I didn't destroy. They'd be able to have it, you could offer the ara, right? They're nullified and they should be like dust of the earth. Right? So you say this, some people say it three times. Some people say that by the beer, the actual burning, should say one of the times, should say hefker, or it should be hefker, you could offer ka ara. Because maybe offer the ara would be worth something. So hefker means dafka, that it's belongs to nobody. But fine. So, regarding what you actually have to use to do the bedikah, so as a custom, use the candle, the candle, the spoon, a little feather. Mekarim, you don't have to go like that. Now, you can't use a torch. You can't use a havdalah candle. You have to use a regular candle or use a flashlight. The flashlight might be better because it's brighter, it's not as dangerous, especially if you're getting close to the wall or in the corners or near outlets, whatever it is. Flashlight's probably the safer option. it's more controlled. You know, you can kind of tilt it and whatnot without burning anything or dripping wax everywhere. So flashlight's probably the better option. You don't have to go with the feather and spoon. Just check, move it. Just, you know, if you find anything, pick it up, throw it out, take an Acme bag or something, and anything you find, just chuck it in there. Use gloves if you want. So if the Bedika wasn't performed at night, so you do it during the following day, even after the time of Biur Chametz has passed, if you forgot or weren't able to, you're on a trip, you got home 2 hours before Pesach, do it now. Just check now. And any chametz that would be found on Yom Tov should be covered, and then burn in the Chol HaMoed. And if found in the Chol HaMoed, just burn it. Or if it's found on the second Yom Tov, so cover it, and after Yom Tov, or after Yom Tov's over, so burn it or flush it down the toilet. The Iker beer, the post can bring down that fire is the best way to do it, but it's not the only way to do it. So flushing it down the toilet also works because it gets stuck in the sewer and it gets gross and nasty. No one's going to want to eat it. Maybe the rats, but we're not worried about rats wanting to eat it. So like we said, if you're going away for Pesach and you're going away before the night of the 14th, so then do the Bedika earlier. Now, keeping the non-Jews chametz over Pesach, we said you have to have a separate room, or you should set aside a room or a closet or something, or specific drawers or cabinets in the kitchen, and label them chametz, close them so that way, you don't come to open them. If, for whatever reason, you forgot something in the closet that you locked away for the goy, and you have to open it, you could. Ideally, this should be stipulated in the Mechirat Chametz contract. You should put that in there, tell whoever you're having sell them that if I need something, I'm gonna go into the closet and take it, because it's something of mine that I'm not selling. Like, let's say I left the vacuum in there for some reason. Okay, you can go grab the vacuum. But it should only be done sparingly. You shouldn't like go in there 4 times a day. Should be like maybe once a day, if that. Now, chametz on Erev Pesach. So you're allowed to eat chametz until 4 hours into the day. After that, there is an issue to eat it. But you have 1 hour after that to benefit from it. So you could technically sell it. You can destroy it after the 5th hour. So you definitely have to destroy it. You can't own it at all. So Midiraisa, you can have it up until Chatzot. Rabbanan, where it goes, or you have 4 hours to destroy it. Or the 4 hours to eat it and 1 extra hour to destroy it. And then after that, you still have to destroy it, but then there's an issue for at least 1 hour and issue to Rabbanan of owning chametz, and after that being issue to Raisa of owning chametz. And the bitul has to be performed before the 6th hour of the day to be effective, so excited by the end of the 5th hour. Once you eat breakfast Erev Pesach, you should brush your teeth and floss, because the chametz gets stuck, it's a problem. Now, there is a Ben Ish Chai that says that someone had a dream that they ate chametz on Pesach, and he went to the Ben Ish Chai, and the Ben Ish Chai told him that he didn't brush his teeth, and so that there was chametz in his mouth that came out, and he ate it during the Seder. Now, Hamavadi has a question on this and says, I hear what you're saying, but we hold that once 6 hours passes, anything that's in your mouth isn't considered food. So case comes, like, let's say someone eats meat and 6 hours later wants to eat dairy. So if he didn't brush his teeth, so as long as there's no actual chunks of meat in his mouth, it can just eat the dairy. It's not a problem. But, you know, because it's not food. So somebody does happen to ask on the Shben Ish Chai. We'll leave it at that. But ideally, one should brush their teeth so that way. Everybody actually comes and says that really what he meant to say was that he ate chametz during the time when he wasn't supposed to eat it before Pesach actually started, in that 6 hour or 7 hour window before Pesach. So again, after the beer, there's another Kol Chamir that we say, say anything again that I didn't find that's in my reshut, so it should be nullified and shouldn't be anything and should be hefker and like dust of the earth and everything else, and it's good. Now the question is, why do we have to go through this whole thing? We have to sell the chametz and search for the chametz and nullify the chametz and destroy the chametz. So really any one of them would work. So the Mishnah Psachim says that, you know, the rabbi is obligated to do both, because bittul is something in the heart. So I could say I'm being mevatel my chametz, but really, do I mean it? If I find chametz on Pesach, you know, I find a bagel or something I didn't find, you know, beforehand, am I really going to be mevatel it or not? Am I really going to have mine? Oh, it's such a waste. Like, am I going to think such a waste of a bagel and throw it out? Because if so, then my bittul meant nothing. I owned a bunch of chametz on Pesach. So, and by beer, yeah, I could destroy all my chametz in fire, but what if I don't find it? So then, you know, anything I didn't find is also a problem. So the rabbi said we should do both. And then the mechira for things we'd like to keep and hopefully buy back after Pesach if the goy didn't take it and eat it. Deraita, any one of them is good. Deraita, you could sell all the chametz and buy it back. Deraita, you could be mevato all the chametz and zehu. Deraita, you could burn all the chametz and zehu. But the problem is, if you burn it all, could be you're not going to find all of it. And if you mevato it, maybe I didn't really mean it. Right? And if I sell it, we get in the same problem of, well, if the guy comes and knocks on my door and says, can I have my chametz? You know, am I actually going to give it to him? Because if not, then I have a problem that, you know, the sale is bottled retroactively, and retroactively I own chametz on Pesach, and that's a huge problem. So if chametz falls into a food on Pesach, kol shehu's aser. If it falls into a food before Pesach, as long as it's not noticeable, then it's bottled b'shishim. Right? So for Svarim, for Ashkenazim, could be there are issues with that. There's a Ramah that says if beer happens to be poured into wine, so on Pesach the wine would be aser. Maran, Shulchan Aruch, Mavari Pasen is the other way, that it wouldn't be, that it's batel b'shishim, as long as it happened before Pesach. The reason is Ashkenazim hold that Chametz wakes up on Pesach, Svarim don't. And the Nafka Mina is, if I use the Chametz pot by accident on Pesach, right, that was not Ben Yomo. And I had a pot I didn't use for 3 days, and I wanted to cook something on Chol HaMoed with it, and I started cooking with it, and I realized this is my chametz pot. Now what? So according to Moran, paskins don't intend leave gum, which means that after 24 hours, any taste inside the pot is pagum, and it only makes things worse. This would also apply to chametz, and therefore the mixture would be allowed. The reason for it is that because, yes, after Pesach, it would be mutter, but next Pesach, it would be aser too. The Ashkenazim hold that, well, there's a time afterward that it would be permitted, so right now it's aser. So I didn't even answer, yeah, but it might be permitted right after Pesach, but if I had managed to keep it somehow until the following Pesach, it would go back to being aser. So the Nafka Mina is, if I cook with a chametz pot for Svaradim, you could eat the food. The pot would still need to be koshered for Pesach. But by Ashkenazim, they would not be allowed to eat the food. Okay, we talked about koshering vessels and kelim and all sorts of things before. So now, Erev Pesach, we said you can eat chametz until 4 hours into the day. At this point, then you have to go do the beer chametz and burn it all. Anyone who's a bechor should hear go to a siyum, and you have to eat at the siyum. You can't take the food from the siyum and go home and eat it there. You can't hear the siyum and say, okay, thank you very much, leave and go home and eat there. It doesn't work. You have to eat from the siyum. Now, the problem is, most siyumim happen at a shul. And the shul is not going to let anybody bring in bread.
So
it has to be some kind of mizonot, really. Mizonot works. So, but actually, it's a little hard because there are some Ashkenazim who have the custom for the entire month before Pesach, they don't eat matzah. From Chodesh Nisan, they don't eat matzah. And definitely the day before, it's also for anyone to eat matzah.
Right.
So you can't have matzah. Now, for Ashkenazim, though, matzah is hamotzi. Yeah. By us, matzah is mizonot, except on Pesach. When it's hamotzi, because it's the only bread around, and there are other reasons and inyanim involved there, which we don't really have time to get into. But there is one thing which we can do, which is still going to be mizonot on Pesach, which is egg matzah. So, B'zat Hashem, someone in the minyan will make a siyum. If not, I'll do it.
We'll
find on Shabbat if anyone's doing it. If not, I'll learn through Masechet Mishnayot real quick next week, and we'll make a siyum Friday morning.
But no, LMS has bagels, and they designate a small space upstairs. And they
okay, so if they have a space upstairs, it's fine.
Bagels and
the safer option, especially for the shul and whatnot, egg matzah for Saturday evening. You can make a mizonot on that, and you're good to go. So I actually did buy a box of egg matzah. I figured I'd just learn a Masechet Mishnayot real quick anyway. So for this type of siyum, because it's such a mekel kind of inyan anyway, you don't need to learn a whole like giant Masechet Gemara. You don't have to learn like Masechet Brachot or Bava Kam or anything. You can learn a Masechet Mishnayot with the Bar Tanura. Pick a couple of things from Tosfot Yom Tov or one of the other Pirushim.
Which one is the short one? Probably.
The Bar Tanura is it's like a short Masechta.
Yeah.
So because you're doing Mishnayot, I wouldn't say go pick a short Masechta. Like Megillah is 4, Chagig is 3, but I wouldn't say pick something a little bit longer. I'll probably just do like Masechta Berachot. It's not so hard to go through. The Bar Tanura is great. There's a bunch of other interesting commentaries. I'll just learn real quick. The other thing you can do is Zohar. You can learn a chelik of Zohar, and you don't actually need to understand anything when you're reading Zohar. So you could just, if someone wanted to pull up a chelik of Zohar and just fly through it, between now and Friday, technically they can make a siyum on that, even though they understood not a word of it. They don't say that by any other type of limud except for chumash. Someone reads chumash, they're considered somewhat a form of limud Torah, even though they don't understand a word of it. But anything else, then do we need to understand something. Also Tehillim would fall in that category. They can read Tehillim, and it's considered a tefillah and limud, without knowing exactly what the Tehillim means. But anything else on Erev Pesach, eggs, rice, drinks, whatever, you can consume them as long as they're not actually chametz. So you can't use the rice that is enriched with wheat flour, but if you have rice that you check for Pesach, so make it all week long. And even Ashkenazim, if they have rice that would be kosher for Pesach, but that they won't eat it, so they could eat it up until Pesach because it's only a kinyot issue, which is it's a minhag, it's a drabanan issue, they wouldn't have a problem with that. So from basically let's say 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, at Pesach, you can't drink more than a ravid of wine, which is about 3.1-3.2 ounces, something like that, because wine does have some sort of a satiating effect, so you wouldn't be allowed to eat that. And you cannot drink any amount of intoxicating alcoholic beverages because you have to be awake and hungry and functional for the Seder. Now, there's one other thing about Erev Pesach that is worth discussing, which is Malacha. So, Erev Pesach is interesting because by every other Erev Yom Tov, we don't have an iser of doing malacha. By Erev Pesach, there is, but only from Chatzot. And the reason is like this. The Gemara says that when someone brings a korban, that day is considered for them a Yom Tov. And on that day, they're not allowed to do melacha. Now, it's not every type of melacha. It's not like Shabbat. And it's not actually like Yom Tov either. It's kind of an in-between stage between Chol HaMoed and Yom Tov. It's a little more mahmir than Chol HaMoed, whereby, let's say, someone who on Chol HaMoed was released from prison would be allowed to cut his hair or shave his beard. Svaradim, we can cut our fingernails on Chol HaMoed. Anyway, you don't have to be like the Ashkenazim and cut them dafka on Erev Yom Tov, and then if they happen on Chol HaMoed to need cutting again, you can cut them. Svaradim, we don't care about this. If you didn't cut them, you cut them, whatever. Chol HaMoed, if you see your nails need cutting, cut them. Like, you don't need to worry about it. On Erev Pesach, you can't get a haircut. You can't cut your own hair, and you can't have a Jew cut your hair. If you ran out of time, and you could find a goy that'll cut your hair, preferably for free, then yeah, you could potentially do that. If anyone gets involved in that situation, I would contact your local Orthodox rabbi. But there are other... there's an Isser Malacha when someone brings a Korban. So ideally, one should not work in their office or their job past Chatzot Hayom on Erev Pesach. If they did, there is a concept of perhaps donating all of the money that one earned for those whatever hours they worked after Chatzot, donating that to a tzedakah or to Kimcha de Pischa or to Kolel or whatever it is, so that way they don't get any benefit from it, because there is an Eser Malacha there. Also, by Erev Pesach, in terms of Malacha, so gardening would be a problem, or any type of basically any most things that are forbidden in Yom Tov and Shabbat will be problematic. I'm trying to get through the book and find the actual
It's more like Malechet Oman, someone is like his profession.
We say on Erev Shabbat, if I have a hole in my pants that I want to fix, so even if it's a half hour to Shabbat and I can fix it in 5-10 minutes, so I'm allowed to fix it because it's a Torah Shabbat. Can't do that at Pesach. So here we go. So there are people who even have the custom to not do malacha from the morning of Pesach. However, it's not the general. The general is only after Chatzot. Prohibited after Chazal, we said taking a haircut and shaving, doing laundry, and writing is forbidden after Chazal. The exceptions with writing would be if you're writing a letter to a friend that you're gonna deliver on that someone could deliver on Yom Tov or before Yom Tov, or if somehow someone managed to find the time to sit down and learn and they want to write down a chidush that they had. So that's considered a Devar Ha'avid, something you could lose, and so therefore you could write that down. Regarding writing to a friend, it's considered a Simchas Yom Tov or an Oneg Shabbat, whatever it is. This year kind of be both Oneg and Simcha. So working for pay, like you said, some people say Chatzot, others say from Mincha Ketana, which is about 2.5 hours before Shkia. Unless you don't have money to pay for Yom Tov expenses. But things you are allowed to do, you can cut your nails, you can iron clothes, polish shoes, you can do minor repairs. So here, according to Yonatan Nachson, you could even do, you could even stitch your pants before Pesach if you needed to. As long as probably though in this case it would be a you wouldn't be able to do Masei Uman. You'd have to probably do it a little haphazardly, not so professionally. I have to look into that. Malacha that's performed by a goy on a Jew's behalf, perfectly mutter. And any malacha that's permitted in Chol HaMoed, so you could do that on Erev Yom Tov itself. Like I said, the difference by the stricter factor is the laundry, which you can't do in Chol HaMoed unless it's for. There are certain situations, like for babies, who just constantly soiling clothing, so you can wash that. It doesn't really matter how much they have, it's always seem to need more clothes. And like I said, haircuts, someone, because normally they're forbidden on Chol HaMoed, but someone who was on a ship and that landed in Chol HaMoed couldn't cut their hair. Someone was released from prison, they'd be allowed, which wouldn't apply to most people. Hopefully, most people come Chol HaMoed. And that basically takes us to Neil Seder from not performing lachem. You can drive to shul, by the way, not a problem. That's allowed on Chol HaMoed also. you can't light a fire just for no reason, but if there's some sort of enjoyment or you want to take a trip, whatever. So you also the same thing driving to shul. You can go ahead and drive. That's not considered an Isra Malacha and Erev Yom Tov, or for Erev Pesach. And drive the shul, buy mincha, avid, come home, make kiddush, and B'zat Hashem on Sunday, we'll start going through the halachot of Leil HaSeder. Any other questions before we sign off? No, we're good? Okay.
All right, we're done, Aviyah, all right?
Maybe I'll mean.